up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a critical care pharmacy podcast. This is episode 104. In this episode, I'll discuss highlights from the new IDSA HAP and VAP guidelines. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode104. If you know someone who would find this podcast helpful, please share it with them. I've ordered the proof copy for my book, A Pharmacist's Guide to Inpatient Medical Emergencies, and I look forward to hitting the final publish button very soon. To see the cover, you can go to clinicalpharmacybooks.com. The guidelines that I'll be talking about in this episode were published July 14th, 2016. They're titled Management of Adults with Hospital-Acquired and Ventilator-Associated Pneumonia, 2016 Clinical Practice Guidelines by the Infectious Diseases Society of America and the American Thoracic Society. These guidelines went 11 years between updates. Three major differences between the 2005 and 2016 guidelines are, number one, the adoption of the GRADE methodology for evaluation of all available evidence. This is pretty standard. Other recent guidelines that we've discussed on this show have also adopted the GRADE methodology. Number two, the removal of the concept of healthcare-associated pneumonia, or HCAP. Number three, a greater emphasis on local antibiograms altering the choice of empiric antibiotic therapy. Now, the panel unanimously agreed to remove the concept of HCAP from the guidelines. The main reason for the removal of HCAP is that contact with the healthcare system is not as good a predictor of risk for multidrug-resistant bacteria. Local antibiograms and ICU-specific antibiograms are heavily emphasized throughout the guidelines. And these guidelines are specifically meant for application in non-immunocompromised patients. The opportunistic pulmonary infections that immunocompromised patients are at risk for are not addressed here. Now, as far as biomarkers go, the guideline authors address the use of biomarkers such as procalcitonin, C-reactive protein, and the clinical pulmonary infection score. The guidelines recommend not using any biomarkers to make the decision to initiate antibiotic therapy for HAP or VAP and to rely on clinical criteria alone. The guidelines provide a weak recommendation for the use of procalcitonin levels plus clinical criteria to make the decision on whether to discontinue antibiotic therapy in patients with HAP or VAP. One reason for the weak recommendation is that the control groups in the studies identified there were antibiotic durations of 9 to 15 days. So with the guideline recommendations for 7 days of therapy, which we'll get into a little later for HAP or VAP, it's unclear whether procalcitonin levels would be a benefit for deciding to stop antibiotics before 7 days is up. Now, risk factors for multidrug resistant or MDR pathogens are also covered in the guidelines. Prior intravenous antibiotic use within 90 days is considered a risk factor for MDR pathogens, including MDR pseudomonas, in patients with either VAP or HAP. Prior intravenous antibiotic use within 90 days is also a risk factor for MRSA in VAP or HAP. So one of the big differences is it's not contact with the healthcare system within the past 90 days, but it's prior IV antibiotic use. Now, beyond this prior IV antibiotic use within 90 days, there are additional risk factors for MDR pathogens in VAP only. These risks are septic shock at the time of VAP, ARDS preceding VAP, 5 or more days of hospitalization prior to the occurrence of VAP, and acute renal replacement therapy prior to VAP onset. Now, for VAP treatment, MRSA coverage is suggested in VAP for patients with a risk factor for antibiotic resistance, or if the unit the patient is being treated in has more than a 10 to 20% prevalence of MRSA among all Staph aureus isolates. If the prevalence of MRSA is unknown, it should be assumed to be high. I'm pretty sure at my hospital, the prevalence of MRSA hospital-wide is about 50%. The guidelines give equal weight to the use of vancomycin and linezolid for MRSA coverage in VAP. The guideline authors suggest the choice between vancomycin and linezolid may be guided by patient-specific factors such as blood cell counts, concurrent prescriptions for serotonin reuptake inhibitors, renal function, and cost. The guidelines suggest prescribing two antipsilocybin antibiotics from different classes if the patient with VAP has risk factors for MDR pathogens or if more than 10% of the isolates in the unit are resistant to the choice of antipsilocybin antibiotic. Again, if the prevalence of antibiotic resistance is unknown, it should be assumed to be high. If the patient has structural lung disease, such as bronchiectasis or cystic fibrosis, then two antipsilocybin agents are recommended in VAP. And the guidelines specifically recommend avoiding aminoglycosides and colistin if possible. Now on to HAP treatment. The authors add an additional decision point for deciding on empiric antibiotic treatment for patients with HAP, and that is whether or not the patient is at high risk of mortality. The authors consider patients with ventilator support or septic shock due to HAP to be at high risk of mortality. So treatment goes like this. Patients with no MRSA risk and who are not at high risk of mortality, they get coverage for MSSA and one antipsilocybin agent. Patients with MRSA risk and who are not at high risk of mortality need coverage for MRSA, but still only one antipsilocybin agent. And patients with MRSA risk and who are at high risk of mortality, they need coverage for MRSA and two antipsilocybin agents. Now, the duration of therapy now has a strong recommendation for both VAP and HAP to be 7 days total. The guidelines also talk about pharmacodynamic and pharmacokinetic optimization of antibiotic therapy. The authors give a weak recommendation that for patients with HAP or VAP, we suggest antibiotic dosing be determined using PK/PD data rather than the manufacturer's prescribing information. Now, in the context of the guidelines, the PK/PD optimized dosing refers to the use of antibiotic blood concentrations, extended and continuous infusions, and weight-based dosing for certain antibiotics. I hope the removal of HCAB, the emphasis on local antibiograms, and the recommendation to use PK/PD data rather than manufacturer's prescribing information provides some breathing room from CMS quality measures to allow for common sense and good clinical care to prevail. My hospital does not have an ICU-specific antibiogram. We have 3 adult ICUs with 8, 10, and 19 beds. It'll be interesting to see if we can get a meaningful number of Pseudomonas isolates to develop unit-specific guidance for when to use two antipsilocybin agents for HAP or VAP. Listeners can support the show when they shop using my link to Amazon. It will cost you no extra money, and I will receive a small commission from Amazon. Just bookmark and use my link, pharmacyjoe.com/shop, to take you to Amazon each time you shop. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.